TCL is a proud sponsor of the Score North Studios. TCL, America's fastest growing TV brand.
Hockey, yeah.
My favorite.
It's Judd's Hockey Show.
Here it in play, X. Despite the fact that we have not started yet. For me, playoff beard attempt. For you, nice coffee mug. What's that coffee mug you get?
This is a brand new office coffee mug. A friend of mine got me it for my birthday last week. She knows I love The Office, and it's got a bunch of fun office sayings on it. Did I stutter? The fire is shooting at us. Dundee Awards. If you're a fan of The Office, you will know all these references, Judd. I know you've seldomly watched The Office.
I watched it Steve Carell days quite a bit.
Okay.
Pretty much quit after that.
But yeah, it's a brand new, it's a big one too. It houses like probably two cups of coffee. I usually like just the traditional normal size coffee mug. I don't like too much.
Big coffee mug. Like I've got, you got to get the big coffee.
But this one's like as big as my head right here. So it houses two cups of coffee and it works really well.
So as far as that show goes, my suggestion is this. If you have not unearthed the original Ricky Gervais series, it's fantastic. It's better. It's hilarious. And Gervais back then was just magnificent.
I disagree that it was better, but I do think it was funny. It's pretty damn funny.
I like Gervais more because he really is probably way more of a jerk than Carell is. So I thought the character worked perfectly because he's largely... Like, he's not stupid, but he's also not acting because he's got jerk. I don't think Steve Carell's a jerk. I think he seems like a decent guy. So
sure, I got you.
All right, so the National Hockey League, Declan, we found out, finally is going to be back. They're going to start January 13th. We do not have – we're recording this at just after noon on Tuesday. We do not have a wild schedule yet. We know it's going to be 56 games. We know what division they're going to be in. There are also five wild training camp storylines that I've gotten that we can get to. But, yeah, let's start with league-wide stuff, and let's start with this question. You go first.
Okay.
Your thoughts on a consolidated, very tight 56-game regular season.
I'm fine with it. I'm totally okay with it. I think everyone's consensus is it perfect? No, but we'll take it. I think as everyone has been saying that from what I've heard on SiriusXM and other places too, that is it perfect? No, but in the imperfect world that is 2020, which is still now lingering, obviously into 2021, I'm okay with it. I like the seeds. I like the divisions. I like most of the things about it. I'm curious what this travel schedule looks like. It looks like we'll get a schedule here in the next 24 hours after recording this. And I think it's going to be kind of a lot like what baseball does, Judd, where it's just they're going to be playing the same teams, maybe back-to-back days or even in three-game series or spurts like that, just to limit the amount of travel you're doing. So there'll be some logistical hiccups, I'm sure. But in general, I'm for it. I like it.
I will say this. I actually think a regular season schedule between 56 and 60 games, Dex, is preferable. I think they have this. I think now, as far as what you're saying about travel and the fact that they can't leave their hotels, that's not great. I get that. But the actual number of games, I love this. I love this. You know why? Because I am a fan of whatever makes opening night meaningful. And traditionally, I'm sorry. But opening night in hockey or the NBA as well, right? It means nothing. Like, it's like, oh, it's opening night, and I'll check back with you at Christmas, right?
Right.
This is going to be quick training camp, no exhibition games, drop the puck, and you can't really struggle. Like, if you get off to a bad start, you're toast. You're done. Yeah. You're done. So I get from a financial standpoint, 82 games is going to be probably what we stick with. I get that. I don't like it, but 56 to 60 games from a fan standpoint, I love it. And there's like, give me a reason. Give me a really solid case to play 82 regular season games. I love the sport. I can't give you one.
And you and I have been calling for games to be shortened or the season to be shortened for forever now, for as long as we've been doing this podcast. And I didn't think it'd go as small as 56. I think maybe we were looking more at like 65, 70 if we were really trying to shorten the season in a non-COVID year. But in general, it's the point that I've always liked to make. How come baseball is twice the regular season and it finishes quicker than hockey and basketballs with their playoffs? Because there's an 82 regular game season. It takes forever. There's 16 teams that get in the playoffs. It's a whole lot of hoopla. So if they can shorten this, and for the most part, with the way the schedule is shaping up in the league year, not just how they want this done, I mean, the draft will be done by, I believe, late July. I mean, basically, things are only like 3 weeks pushed back from where they traditionally have been. So really, I mean, God willing, if everything goes back to normal by the, you know, or at least we're trending in the back to normalcy by the fall of 2021, and that's a long shot still.
Don't get greedy. Yeah.
However, it's at least looking like that the league and the calendar year is falling into place that they want things to be back to normal by October of 2021, and things won't be so rushed.
Yes, if this was not going to be driven by the dollar, I would say that the one thing that we're going to see again, though, is because the playoffs are great. Like that's fine. The playoffs are fine. But the one thing that we're going to see again is it's going to be really fun to have a regular season that is meaningful from day one. So I like this. Second thing. So we've got redone for 1 year divisions. The playoff format is going to be intra-division playoffs and then a reseed eventually. Mm-hmm. All games are going to be played within your division. So your 56 games will all be played against your division opponents. And then there's going to be no regard for or acknowledgement of conferences. So a Stanley Cup final could be Toronto, Boston, Colorado, Dallas. I'll start again with this one. For what we're up against here in one season, I really like this. I don't know. I need to see this play out to decide, because the wild cards to me, I do like, but given what they're dealing with here and the fact that it's not going to be normal, the fact that you know, are going to have problems probably with outbreaks and you don't want a ton of travel and all of that good stuff. I think for what they were up against, they've come up with a really good plan that could be fun. And there could be things, I'm not certain, to be learned from this going forward for how, what might be the best idea for playoff structure. I sort of like the fact, Dex, that the Stanley Cup final could be like teams that ordinarily can't meet. Because unlike baseball, I don't really care about conferences.
Correct.
Like, I'm not a big, oh, that's a sacrilege, Toronto can't play Montreal.
Right.
It might be fun.
Right.
So I do think, again, just like with the 56 games, I think they potentially have stumbled on something that they could learn from.
Right. And I mean, how much fun could it have been for other sports if we could have seen like a Kobe Bryant, Tim Duncan NBA Finals, or, you know, a Peyton Manning, Tom Brady Super Bowl? You know, like I love this idea that it doesn't have to be within your conference, and the whole, you know, relocation. And I know there's Minnesota was always going to be on this bubble, for the lack of a better word, of which spot they're going to get in because of where they're geographically located. And for years, I mean, Judd, what was it in the 70s? The Norris Division had you had teams on the East Coast, you had Vancouver, you had all over the globe, you know, like it was never organized successfully. And now I know that was 1975. It was 40, 50 years ago. At the same time, relocation, I think, would always get better. And I kind of like where the Wild are in the West.
I don't mind it for now. So the thing is, I like it when you're playing teams close by, just because I think it does breed potentially more hostility. But but in going back, since the Wild has been placed in the Central, when we see the Blackhawks play, like they don't play a style. So I might be wrong there. Like, it's hard to hate the Blackhawks. I get that people don't like Kane and Taze and Duncan Keith, but like they don't play a style that you hate them for. So you might be right there. The other thing, though, is if you forget the start times, because that's going to be the big thing, right? People are going to complain about that. I get that. And
I don't care.
I get that. If you work at 9.
I get that.
That's fine. But like, let's put the start times aside. When you look at the restructured for 2020-21 Central and West decks, I think the Wild caught a break. I think that as far as if you are going to be, so what they're going to do for this season is take the top four teams from each division and have them then play each other in the playoffs.
Yep.
So the Wild card's gone. The whole format of like the Western Conference, Eastern Conference is gone. I think if you look at what the Wild has been put in as far as the division goes versus if they had been flipped into the Central, I think there's a real case to be made that just from a finishing in the top four and making the playoff tournament format, I think it's not a huge one, but I do think that they caught a break, because I don't know. Like, my guess is that the Ducks, the Kings, or the Sharks, one of those three are going to be improved, but I don't think they're going to be great, right?
Right? Okay. Yep.
So the top four teams from the new West from last year are St. Louis, which had 94 points in the Central, Vegas, which had 86 points in the Pacific, Colorado, which to jump back to the Central had 92 points, the Wild, and then the next team from the Pacific were the Coyotes with 74 points. So I think that I believe that the Golden Knights, the Blues, and the Avs are cinches. I think they're going to be fine. They're the top three teams.
Yes.
After that, though, that thing is wide open, and I think that there's a really going to be a great opportunity for the Wild, if they play their cards right, to grab that one. Absolutely. Don't you?
Yes, I do. I think if no matter what, if you're looking at the West or the Central, the Wild were at best the fourth best team. That's what I will say, because even in the Central, Carolina is better than the Wild. Tampa Bay is certainly better than the Wild, and Dallas is better than the Wild.
And Dallas probably got flipped to the West, right? If the Wild goes to the Central, Dallas is probably in the West. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's my guess.
It could have been a different little story there. But sure. In general, I think if you're looking at the Central and the West division, the Wild were going to be probably at best the fourth best team if they achieved what they were supposed to achieve. But I think the bottom feeders in the West, the Kings, the Sharks, the Ducks, all of those teams are bottom feeders. And Central has some too. Chicago's not going to be good. You know,
Detroit.
Detroit's going to be awful.
Yeah.
But I think the Wild can make hay against those Western Conference teams more. And I don't know how much stock I do put into this, but in general, the Wild have played the Pacific really, really well in their franchise. I mean, they have Vegas's number. I have no idea how they've beaten Vegas 7 out of 8 times in their appearances. Now, Vegas is far and away a more superior hockey team than the Wild, and I would take them 8 days a week in a playoff series against Minnesota right now.
Right.
But I think the way it's shaped up, I think the Wild have a very good chance to get into the top four, because I think in general, you know, it's the usual narrative of making hay against the bad teams, going 500 against the good teams. So, like, I envision the Wild taking 60% of the games against those California teams. And if they can play 500 hockey against the top guys in Colorado and Vegas,
yep,
then I like their chances. I do. I think it's a good spot.
And I think in the Central, potentially, the teams that would cause you problems. So, like, the teams that in the West, it looks like to me, the team that you're mainly going to be competing with for the fourth spot is probably the Coyotes, right?
Sure.
And then like the Sharks, the Kings, or the Ducks could jump up. I don't think all three do, but I think one could. But okay. I don't know that, okay? Mm-hmm. In the Central, the problem is Florida's not bad. They could jump up. Nashville, right? Same exact thing. Columbus. So I think your problem is let's say the top let's say the top three teams in the Central are going to be Tampa Bay, Dallas, and Carolina.
Sure.
Your competition for that fourth spot in the Central division, in my opinion, is greater than it probably is the West. And as far as the team goes, to be clear here, I don't think going out West for extended periods of time and staying there and playing is going to be a problem for the players. I get the fans because of start times, but like, Billy Guerin did his press conference. The Wild GM yesterday did a Zoom call, I should say. Right. And he was asked a bunch of questions about, you know, but what about the travel? What about the remember, they're going to go to California and basically shack up there.
Yeah.
So it's not like you're going to play the Kings and it's a home and home. You know, it's an old school home and home. We're coming home to play the Kings. Now we're going back out West. This is not going to be the league. I think when we see the schedule, we're going to find that the league is trying to move heaven and earth not to have teams travel a ton. So I think the Wild's going to go out West and basically stay there for an extended period of time. And then they'll come home and play here for probably what we consider ordinarily to be an extended period of time. So this whole notion that, oh my God, they're going to log all of these miles and they're going to be tired. They'll log miles, but they'll also just stay there. And I think once you're there, if you're a pro athlete, you're fine. Now the mental part of basically being hunkered down in your hotel will be probably a grind. Mm-hmm. But I don't think the traditional part of, man, that guy looks tired because he just traveled a lot. I don't think that's going to be a problem.
I don't think that's going to be a problem necessarily. I do think, and maybe we'll transition to it, but with no preseason, I think the first couple weeks of the season are going to look a lot like the play-in. So it's going to be sloppy. It's going to be choppy. It's not going to be pretty. We're taking it because it's hockey and we want hockey back. And we obviously were for that. But in terms of the traveling, I mean, I think this is the best lesson the NHL can learn here. I mean, you should do this just like baseball does, just like when the Twins go out west. The Twins don't play three in Seattle, come home to Minnesota, then play three in Los Angeles. It doesn't make any damn sense. So stay out there for 9 games or 9 days, wherever the hell it is. I think that's the best way to go about this. So, yeah, I think there's something to be said about being bogged down, I know, in a Four Seasons hotel or wherever the hell it is for a few days. But at the same time, just like any other quarantine, we've all quarantined. You get stir crazy. You get stir crazy whether you're in the Four Seasons or you're in the North Loop or you're in SLP. It doesn't matter. So I do think that this traveling system can be actually what the NHL will probably take the most from. And if that means getting rid of back-to-backs, like you said, going from LA into Minneapolis, good. Like, good. I don't want to see a team on the heels of a back-to-back and having to start the backup goaltender because the other goalie was tired.
Ugh, you're going to see a lot of backup goalies, Dak. You're
yes,
going to see a lot of them this year.
Yeah, we are.
Yeah, that's a great point too about the travel, and I do think that you just hit on something that's going to be so intriguing to watch, and that's this: the first 5 to 8, but probably the first 5 games, right? By most teams are going to be terrible. Like they are going because they're not. And I love the fact that they're not playing exhibition games, but it is going to be ripe for bad play. Mm-hmm. But what's intriguing is it's going to be the teams that can snap out of that funk the quickest.
Yes.
Because again, with a 56 game season, you can't like have 10 bad games and be like, well, now it's, you know, what's the traditional Wild motto? Let's get to February and flip the old switch, right? Let's flip the switch in February. Zach will get hot. We'll be great. And then we'll
swoon.
Get
swoon in January. The January swoon.
Swoon. A swoon. You're done. No, I'm serious. You're right. You're done. Like if you start off with, oh boy, those first 5 games, though, you know, and now it's 6 games and though, man, it's tough. We are getting our like, that's going to be what you hear, right? We are getting our legs under us. If a division gets off to a good start, you could be absolutely dead. Okay. I want to give you my favorite of the four divisions. Now the Canadian division is still up in the air because we don't know exactly who's going to be allowed to play where in Canada. And if there's going to be with the provinces, no travel restrictions. But can I give you my favorite? Because it's just going to be a bloodbath and it's going to be so much fun. Have you looked at the East?
Yeah.
The East has Boston, 100 points. Okay.
Yep.
They've got Islanders, 80 points last year. The Rangers, 79 points. Philadelphia, 89. Pittsburgh, 86. Washington, 90. New Jersey and Buffalo were the only two non-bubble teams. That division is going to be so much fun. And you're going to have, I would say you're going to have a minimum of two really good teams mm-hmm. that don't make it. Because it's four teams, right? Like, I think Boston's in, don't
yep.
you?
Yep.
I think Washington's in.
Yep.
I think Philadelphia is coming off a really good year. And I let's say the Rangers, all right?
Right. Okay.
Or Pittsburgh. But yeah. I mean, my point is you've got two, what are going to be two really legitimate, really good teams. And keep in mind, too, these teams are going to only play each other. Mm-hmm. Like they are going to kick each other's asses on a nightly basis. This is going to be fun. But man, if I was in the East, I'd be saying, give me something, you know, give me something else here, boys. This is going to be really tough.
I hate to be this person because they won, what, 3 Stanley Cups in this last 10 years. But Pittsburgh, if you're Pittsburgh right now, okay, so you've had some brutal postseason exits since you won your last cup, right? I think you've only won like 3 of your last 20 playoff games. It's been a little bit brutal. You got bounced against Montreal as a 5th and 12th seed in that play-in tournament. And now there could be a very compelling case that they'll be the last team out with still a very good record because you have teams like Boston, Pittsburgh, Washington, Islanders. Don't forget the Islanders.
Oh, no.
You know, you're going to have a collection.
And what if Buffalo comes back and actually plays well?
I know they're going to be at least interesting. I don't know if they're going to be a shoe-in by any means, but I think they'll be fun to watch.
Yeah.
I think you're going to have two teams, and especially one of those two teams is going to be Pittsburgh. That's going to be say, whoa, hold on here. You're telling me Minnesota in the West only finished with 40 points and we finished with 47, but we don't get in. And now we get screwed.
You know what it is? The NFC East, Declan, it's the, that the other divisions, they're going to look at like Washington's football team, right? They're 6-8, but they're a playoff team right now. The teams in the National Hockey League's Eastern Division are going to look at, to your point, the West and be like, hold on a second. The Eagles made the playoffs.
Right. So, and what's really interesting, Judd, is how that seeding really shakes out. Because remember, the Wild own Pittsburgh's first round pick next year. I believe I think they own it regardless. I don't know if it's lottery protected or not. They own it.
It's not.
So if you're a Wild fan, you're rooting for Pittsburgh's demise. I mean, that's what you would want. Essentially, you're going to walk away with two first round picks. Hopefully maybe one of them in the lottery and one of them, you know, in classic Wild fashion between 12 and 20. So I you'd have to root for Pittsburgh's demise here. And I don't feel sorry for Penguins fans because you've had Sidney Crosby and Malkin in multiple cups in the last 12 years. But at the same time, it's going to be frustrating if you're a Pittsburgh Penguins fan and you're that last team looking out in that division because it's going to be cutthroat as hell.
But you're right. You know what? Too bad. Sorry, Pittsburgh. Yeah. Sorry, things didn't go well. But that division is going to be a great fun. Let's transition to five training camp questions involving the state of hockey's Minnesota Wild, okay?
Okay.
I'm going to give you the first one, and the floor is yours. We are finally going to get a chance. Yes, the day is almost here. Training camp opens for the Wild because they went to the bubble in early January to see Kirill Kaprizov. All right. The speculation is done. He's here. He's here in the flesh. What, Declan Goff, in your opinion, should be the expectations for him now that we can see him play and now that he is really going to be on the team, as opposed to saying, wow, when he gets here, it's going to be great. What do you expect from him in 2020-21 or 2021?
I think my initial reaction is the expectations aren't going to be fair. I think he's going to have a lot of hype around him, and rightfully so. He was arguably the best player in the KHL the last 3 years, which is the best hockey league that's not called the NHL. I think this is a kid who's going to be expected to score goals. I think he's going to be expected to be a good skater, and I expect him to put up points. Now, is it fair to put a 23-year-old who hasn't spent a minute in North American hockey playing over here and expect him to be someone who's the same sniper he was in Russia? Probably not, but we've heard about him. We've heard about how highly touted he is. And I'm not going to throw him under the wind if in the first 8 games he only has a goal and then he gets bag skated and he's getting buried because he isn't doing his job. I'm not going to bury him there.
He ain't going to bag skate him. I got bad news for you.
But at the same time,
him on the back.
He's gonna have not a target on his back. I don't want to say that, but he's gonna be circled. He's gonna be circled as this guy is supposed to be the biggest savior of the franchise since Arturi Gaborik. And I know Parise and Suter were great, but those were free agents who already were established. We knew who the hell they were. This is your biggest prospect. You know, I think it's a bigger prospect than it was Mikael Granlund. I think it's a bigger prospect than what Brett Burns was supposed to be. This is going to be, the expectations are going to be very, very high. And is it going to be fair that we're going to be possibly chastising him after the first week or two of the season? Probably not, but he's earned that. We have to see him perform. The Wild need him to be successful.
It won't be fair to judge him after 2 weeks. And I think I've been on the bandwagon of saying we can't have too much pressure. But I wrote this question last night, Declan Goff, and then I sort of started to do some digging and research into if I was right about trying to dial back the pressure. And I'm with you, okay? So 2 weeks in, if he's not playing well, we just calm down, all right? But as far as the expectations go, all right? I'm going to paint a picture of who he is right now. He is 23, 5'11", 200 pounds. So he's a solid guy. Like, he's not a kid. He's not 19. He's a solid kid or guy. He is, to your point, played in the KHL for, I think, a better part of like 6 years now. Like, so he's been there for quite some time.
Right.
He played for the CSKA Moscow team last year. And for the second straight year, led the KHL, which, to your point, is the second best hockey league in the world, with 33 goals. And I believe he has 63 goals in the last 2 years, 29 assists, 62 points last year in 57 games. I think it's incredibly fair to, for the season, not immediately, because it might take some time for a lot of guys to adjust to how we're going to do things this season. But I think it's incredibly fair for the season to have really high expectations and to put pressure on him based on where he played and age. Like, if this, you know what, if he had come here, Dex, at 19 or 20, I would say, come on, calm down. He is still growing. He's a kid, but he's 23. He's not a kid.
Right.
So the more I looked at this, I do think it's fair that our expectations immediately should be a top line type of wing mm-hmm. who can score goals. Not saying he's not going to slump. So I don't want this to appear that I think that he should score like 56 goals in 56 games. Okay. I'm not saying that. But the more I examined it, I think that the expectations need to be high. And I think that's fair because he's not young for a player. I mean, at, you know, 23 is not right. a kid. He's not young. And he is a guy who has developed himself in a really good league playing against men, so not playing juniors. There is no reason for us not to think that by the time the Wild's 2021 season concludes, that this kid has had a really impressive year. And like, if it takes too much time, that's not a sign that it's going to fall apart, but that is definitely a bad thing considering the buildup that he, or the, I should say the runway, that's probably the better word, that he has given himself to jump into this league and really should hit the ground going pretty quickly.
If I can put my hockey scout hat on here, yeah. just for a second, I think what we know, the guy has a shot and we know the guy can score goals. I think he's a confident kid. Mm-hmm. I think the confidence is there, mm-hmm. but I think what is so difficult for when people make this big jump from international play and into the NHL is, can the kid skate? Can he mm-hmm. skate well? Can he transition well? Mm-hmm. Can he, if he doesn't find the goals, is that going to force him to be pressing a little bit more? Basically, I think we'll be able to see it. And I'm hoping, fingers crossed, that if they do allow media into the XL Energy Center, we're able to actually see him in person. Because if the kid can skate well, I think he's got a very bright future. Because how many guys in Russia come over here with the howitzer shot but can't skate, or don't care, or don't want to transition and want to be lackadaisical? I think he can skate. I'm not trying to make the assumption he can't, but I do think his skating is going, and that's why I'm putting my scout hat on, is going to be what tells us if this kid is for real or not. Can he skate?
So I think it's fair too that it's going to take a little bit of time for him to adapt, but I think that adapting process should be fairly quick. And the one thing that we shouldn't have to go through with him, because again, of his experience in Russia and his age, is a learning experience, right? Mm-hmm. Like, he's going to have to learn some things, but like, this should not be well, you know, he's a kid, so we can't do this, right? Mm-hmm. So I just think that it is fair to apply pressure from day one, as far as you stayed there, you played, that's fine, that's great, but that should benefit the Wild.
Right.
So like, the Wild shouldn't be sitting there with kid gloves on saying, oh, come on, you know, you people expected too much. This guy, and I would say that it's fair probably to characterize Kaprizov as having the most pressure and expectations of immediate impact upon arrival for a guy who hasn't played in this league.
I would say it's right up there with Buxton and Sano, like in terms of the process. And some fans are probably not going to want to hear that because Buxton and Sano have been so up and down a little bit. But I, in terms of prospects that have come to Minnesota or that we've been waiting to see, I think he's right up there. I really think it's right up there. And obviously baseball is a little different, but I think if this kid is for real, this is going to be a saving grace for the franchise. Like, Buxton and Sano are supposed to be that. And it doesn't look like they're going to be the saving grace of the franchise. They're going to be key pieces that help the Twins get to a World Series, maybe still someday. But I think we've kind of maybe wrote off the opportunity that these guys are the saving grace. They're going to save the Twins, because that's what we heard from 2012 to 2014. They're going to be the saving grace. And it turns out, maybe not saving grace, but still key parts of a championship team. And I think with Kaprizov, I should say, the expectations are legit. And I think hockey is a sport where he can step in and make that immediate impact. And I'm curious what happens. I'm really up.
And he should be a star, right? He should be a star player. I mean, this team has been starved for that. Buxton, Sano, Cat. You know, Cat.
Yeah.
As far as that expectation. But I just, the more I thought about the time that he spent in the KHL playing there, the more I thought, if we all say, you know, let's dial it down, That's probably not good.
Hey, all right. Quickly before I transition, do you put him on the same line as Kevin Fiala, or do you spread the wealth out to start?
I spread the wealth out to start with. Eventually I might, but I think I probably put Kaprizov on the second line to start with and Fiala on the first line. But here's the problem. And
I know, you're going to come back.
You just came back to the biggest problem. I don't even have a first line center for Fiala. So what the hell am I going to do? Like, who's the distributor? Like, that's the problem is, I think I've got two really good wings then. If I go Fiala, Kaprizov, I think my top two wings decks are really good.
Right.
Who's getting them the puck?
I know.
Marco Rossi, he's 12. You know, Johan, I mean, seriously.
Yeah, it's a big question.
Oh, question two. Well, I mean, it's the biggest problem they've got, and I don't know. There's no answer. Like, they don't have the guy.
I know.
Okay, when we're talking about who is not going to start training camp practices, Alex Stalock and Zuccarello are both out. Obviously, Matt's had surgery on his right arm to alleviate what is, I guess, a torn ligament suffered last season. Stalock is out indefinitely. This one's a little bit more interesting because of an upper body injury. Does either concern you as we start camp? And I would project here that Zuccarello and Stalock both will not be prepared when the season opens on January 14th.
Here's what's so funny. I'm actually more concerned and I'm more upset that Zuccarello got hurt than Stalock. I think Stalock's injury, it sounds like it was an off the ice. The way I'm reading between these tea leaves here, it seems like it's something that happened after the play-in tournament, like where Zuccarello had an arm injury.
And don't forget that when it comes to things that we don't know, that can involve COVID too, Declan, because like they don't need to tell us that. And they won't.
And I'm not trying to speculate what happened.
What's wrong.
And I'm completely guessing what happened with Alex Stalock. And
you don't know.
But to answer your question, Zuccarello's injury bugs me, I guess, a little bit more. Because number one, when did he get this surgery? Did he not get it till recently? Like, did he get it right after the play-in tournament? And then like just it was intensive rehab, and it's going to take him a while to get going. That's where this one kind of like irritates me, because it's like, well, wait a minute. Like, he had an arm surgery. Okay, when did he have the surgery? And also, after the year you had, did you delay the surgery because you wanted rehab? You didn't know what was going on. Like, if I was Matt Zuccarello and I had this frustrating season, probably my worst season as a pro, and then did you just wait to get this? Like, you already faced an uphill battle going into your second year, and now he's going to be completely rusty in year two. This does not spell well for Matt Zuccarello, because I tried to defend him last year. I tried to hold on to him a little bit, and now, I mean, I'm running out of carrots here.
One of the currently easily one of the top three probably worst sports contracts in Minnesota to a professional athlete is Matt's contract, right? I mean, that contract is Paul Fenton's basically middle finger swan song to this franchise and being stuck. Did he get hurt in the play-in tournament and tried to rehab it and it didn't work? And so he had surgery. Did a doctor diagnose it one way after that tournament, and did another doctor come back? I mean, there's a lot of weird questions. And I guess I'd be more upset if he had contributed something. Now, here's my question. He was such a dud. My question is this. Could you, to start the season, place him on LTIR, which is the long-term injury reserve list, which allows you, if you're allowed to do that, to free up salary cap space?
Right.
Because that's what I would try and do. I mean, they're going to give him another chance, and I get that. But his play last year, to me, was so uninspired. And he got the fifth year on that contract? So I'm curious to see what they do when it comes to him as far as contractually to start the year, because if you did bounce his contract short term off of your cap, that would give you the ability to possibly make a move, which Guerin basically said on his press on a Zoom call he's not going to do. But I mean, he's not going to tell you. He's not going to say, you know what, I am planning to put Zuccarello on LTIR, and I've got all of these plans. Let me tell you about them. Here, I'm going to pull out this note page from my desk drawer. So we don't know that.
I think in a normal year, you long-term injury reserve them, and you can bring in a free agent. I think with the way things are going right now, I don't think that's possible. You know, there's been fans that think you bring back Mikhail Granlund. I am so anti that move.
He's not going to bring grandma back.
And yeah, he knows that. And everyone should know that. And then what happens? So then if Zuccarello comes back, then you're still logjam. Like, I don't want that problem. Like, some people think that's a good problem to have. No, I don't want that problem at all. I don't want two guys who are 28 and Zuccarello's case in his 30s, then bogging down more roster spots. So no, I don't think that's a good idea. And in general, I think this does open the door for someone else younger to make a push.
Yeah. And that his contract is just going to be, it's just a death knell.
And I know Thomas Vanek was a humongous disappointment, and we can put him on the Mount Rushmore of free agent disappointments. But I'll tell you this, the contract was not the issue with Thomas Vanek. It was an effort and distribution issue for Thomas Vanek. It wasn't a contract.
Well, he couldn't move anymore either. Yeah. Like, he got here and he was, Okay, Stalock. Stalock is an interesting case because, as we said before, we don't know exactly what's wrong. I wish him the best, and I hope he's fine. So I will start there, okay? Because he seems like a really nice guy, and he is a quality backup goaltender in this league. I get all that. However, his injury itself and being out to me does open up a great door of opportunity to Kaapo Kähkönen, right? Because this gives you an opportunity now to go into the season. Cam Talbot is your clear-cut one.
Yep.
And now it was going to be a competition, if that, but probably not, between Kaapo and Stalock. And my guess is if Stalock didn't get hurt or didn't get sick, I don't know what, my guess is that he was going to probably be the backup. And now we don't know when the American Hockey League was going to start, Dex. Mm-hmm. So I don't know where Kaapo was going to play beyond practicing, which I don't like. Like, I want Kaapo to play.
Right.
If Stalock's out to start the year, which it almost certainly looks like he's going to be, now this opens up the door for Kaapo to back up Talbot, and Kaapo's going to have to play. Like, you can't, it's not like, hey, we got three games in three nights. Mm-hmm. Cam, are you set? So I do think that from a roster construction standpoint of being able to take a good, long, hard look at players, this actually works out in the sense that you have to make a decision here at some point in time. Can Kaapo play here? Is he potentially long-term a top goalie, which he might be? This opens up the door to starting to go down that path.
Yeah, and I'm excited that Kaapo gets a look. And I know they brought back the Hamburglar too, and he's, you know, he might be on the taxi squad or might get an extended look in training camp. But it's now Kaapo. It's now Kaapo that gets the chance to be the backup. And honestly, if the AHL season, I haven't looked into the logistics of that. And to be honest, my head's been spinning with the NHL one. Not going to go down the AHL path.
Not yet. Not
so if Kaapo can't be the number one guy in the AHL, then it's only going to be beneficial for him to be the backup and play every third night for the Wild. And that's a good thing to have. And yeah, which obviously with Stalock the best, you know, I'm tooting my own horn here. I did have a write that down in October that neither Dubnyk or Stalock would be your opening night goaltending tandem at the beginning of the next NHL season. I certainly did not expect Dubnyk to get traded that quickly. And I certainly did not expect Alex Stalock to go through whatever ailment he's going through.
Well, Garrett, so, does not mess around, Declan Goff.
So it's an accidental opposite field home run for me if this indeed happens. Again, just tooting my own horn because I love to talk about myself.
There you go,
But Kaapo getting a look is going to be a good thing for the Wild.
Question three, do you see a chance that top pick Marco Rossi, who has been playing in Zurich in the Swiss League and now is actually going to go play for Austria in the upcoming World Juniors, which start on Christmas Day and which, by the way, are fantastic to watch.
Oh, yeah.
Do you see a chance that Marco Rossi makes the opening night roster? Because, again, going back to our point from before, they really need help at center.
Here's the thing. If he has any shot of making the roster number one, you got to root that Austria gets bounced quick from the World Juniors tournament. I mean, because it's going to take him a while to get, if he's going to be, and the World Juniors, is that in Canada this year?
Canada, yeah.
Canada?
Edmonton bubble. Okay. We're going back to a bubble in Edmonton. Does that sound familiar?
Yeah, no kidding. If you're a Wild fan, and you're looking for him to make this roster, the first thing you have to root for is Austria gets bounced in the three games and then they're done. And he can then quarantine here. He has to test negative, I believe, for 7 days. And he's going to, I believe if everything worked out well, he can still get here early into training camp, but I don't think he's going to be ready here to start training camp. So he already faces an uphill battle.
But if he plays great, in the World Juniors, you might have a decision. That's the point here, is that they don't like if yeah. they had if they were set, you know, we got our top two guys, I'd be like, OK, probably not. But I am curious. Like, you tell me who is your right now? Who is your opening night? We're about to face it off. Center.
Top line center.
Yeah. I mean, I know who they list on the depth chart, but
it's unfortunately Johansson. And
yeah, he's not a center.
I would honestly, Judd, I'd honestly go with Bonino. I would honestly go with Nick Bonino.
I'd love to debate you and say that's, yeah, I don't know. I honestly don't know.
I know. Like,
Bukestad's going to get a shot. Johansson's going to get a shot at the top line position. Erickson Ek is going to get a shot, I think, probably as the second or third line guy. And I do think that he is probably, with the way he plays the game, an ideal third line center. Don't you?
Of course.
But the Rossi thing is only a talker to me. And I am not, in this case, I am not in favor of trying to force this. Like, I would prefer to see him develop. But I think if he plays in the World Juniors and goes back, I don't think the Canadian Junior Leagues have a plan to start yet. And so he would go back to Zurich. So, I mean, there's going to be a temptation, I think, to try and keep him here probably. And if they did have depth, I'd say no chance. I think there's a chance. I don't think it's probably 50%.
Right.
But I think it's probably 25%.
I think it's probably 20%, and that's the conundrum you're in. Do you want him to shine the World Juniors tournament because that's good for his individual rank and how we see him, or do you want the team to get bounced quickly so you can really get him into Minnesota's training camp and get familiar with the situation and go from there? That's why this is a conundrum for him. I think from everything everyone has said, this is the biggest steal of the first round of the draft. Like, all the draft experts think Marco Rossi falling to, you know, the Wild at 9, wherever the hell it was the biggest surprise of the draft. So you want to see if this guy's legit. He's 19. He's a center, by the way. A center. This is the guy you want.
The only reason why I'm broaching this.
Yeah.
Otherwise, no way.
I know. So it's an interesting conundrum for them to be in. I think what will happen is he'll get here. He might make the roster and be on the taxi squad or be like an extra forward or something. And then after, you know, the 7 days, they'll probably loan him back to Austria. They don't burn the first year of his contract. They did the same thing with Matt Dumba when he was a rookie. I think that's probably the path that happens. But if he steps foot and he shows in training camp, oh my God, no, this guy is legitimate. Let's do it. Burn the first year of his contract.
You know what the problem is? The problem is this too, or the issue is this from a player standpoint, Declan. I could see Fiala, who I don't think holds his tongue internally. I could see him going to Guerin and Dino and saying, guys, I'm playing with Johansson. He's a winger. Like, if this kid can come here and pass the puck and make plays, I think Fiala might make a really strong case. Because to a certain degree, Fiala is going to go as his pivot goes, right? Mm-hmm. Like, his line is, if you have Johansson playing center like a wing, that's going to be a problem there. So it could get dicey. I'm not in favor of trying to rush the kid, but I do see a case where they might say, okay, let's try this. Three wild players, Declan Goff, have gone immediately from the draft to the roster. Gabrick, Pierre-Marc Bouchard, and can you give me the last Wild player to go directly from the being drafted to the Wild roster?
Was it Ek?
No.
Was it?
It's 100 years ago.
Okay.
It's a long time ago.
Say so.
It might not seem obvious because this guy drove Jacques up the wall, but he actually had a lot of talent.
Was it Burnsy?
It was. 2003 was Brent Burns. It was Brent Burns. That's the last one. Three Wild players. So, yeah, if Rossi goes directly to the Wild roster, he will become only the fourth one to do it. All right, question four. Do you believe Bill Guerin when he tells us on Zoom that he has yet to pick a captain? The question was asked, I think it was by Dave Schwartz of CARE. He basically had said, you picked a captain, but have not announced it yet. And Bill Guerin came back with, we haven't picked a captain. It's being discussed. A lot of good candidates. Mm-hmm. Do you believe that this team has identified the captain to succeed Mikko Koivu?
I think they have their decision made. I think it's Jared Spurgeon. I think that's obviously the odds-on favorite. Obviously, if who I would I want it to be Marcus Foligno. I mean, I really do want it to be Foligno.
I think we agree on this.
He has all the characteristics and expectations of being a captain. I know he's entering the last year of his deal. I know that when you look at someone like Jared Spurgeon, who's been the quiet leader of the team, everyone loves him. He has the fancy new contract. It makes sense. I know there's Zach Parise, who's been a captain before and has arguably been even a more notable Minnesota Wild player than Mikko Koivu was, for God's sakes. Okay. Like he's Minnesota hockey. He's been a captain before.
Veteran.
He's big goals. He's a veteran. Yep. Makes some sense. I don't think Suter's going to be the captain of this team. I honestly don't think he has a shot at being the captain of this team. I really don't.
I agree with you.
But if I was running the Wild, or if I had a vote, I should just say I can't just make it my own stranglehold decision. If I had a vote and I was in that room, I'm voting for Marcus Foligno. He has everything I want it to be. But if I was a betting man, it's probably going to be Jared Spurgeon.
I agree completely. And I think that you're right. I think it's going to be Spurgeon. I would pick Foligno personally. And if I was to rank the three of them, I would go Foligno 1, Spurgeon 2, Parise 3. No slight against Zach in this case. But I think that they desperately need to transition to the newer group.
Here's why
I would. Parise, I just wouldn't do.
Here's why I would actually go Spurgeon third, because I think both Foligno and Parise are, I don't want to say transitional captains, but Zach's up there in age, right? Marcus Foligno is also entering the last year of his deal. And if you really wanted to, and you wanted to give a young player the captaincy long term, and with the way the Wilder is built right now, it's all about short term. Let's see what we got here, and then we'll commit, or then we'll reassess. I'd actually could make the case that Jared Spurgeon wouldn't be the worst option, but I'd rather it be Foligno or Parise, because in the short term, it fixes that.
Who gets it if Parise is traded or Foligno leaves as a free agent?
I would love it to be Fiala. I would honestly love it. I give him the captain.
He ain't it. No way.
I give him the cap. I love his swagger. I love his demeanor. I would love it for Fiala.
Nah, he's got too much prima donna score to him.
I want it.
He doesn't talk. And it, plus, here's the thing with Marcus that I love. Mm-hmm. He is a spokesman for the team and is brutally honest while still being a team guy. Fiala, I've covered a ton of guys, Dex, especially in the sport, like him. I mean, and he's a good player. So this is no slight against him as a player. He's really good. But those guys, they're too up and down as far as moods go. If they score, they're in a great mood. If they don't, they're not. They don't always have... This is going to sound weird, but the great scorers don't always have the best interest of the team in mind. They have the best interest of themselves in mind. So I would not go with him. Now, I don't know if there's a guy who is on the roster or up and coming who could take that mantle eventually. But my Parise thing is, I think if the desire on both sides probably to end the relationship was not so high, But I think if the Wild could trade him, which they proved right at the deadline last season, they would trade him in a heartbeat. Right. But I'm with you. I think Foligno would be a great choice. All right. Last question. What are your expectations? And do you think Kevin Fiala is now a star?
Yeah, I think he's a star 100%, Judd. You saw in that plan tournament, even I know it was just four games, but there was no off switch. There was no period of time where it looked like the rust came off. This guy has every buttings to be a superstar. And when you have someone like Kaprizov, who's now coming in, and maybe one day Marco Rossi joins the club, now all of a sudden the Wild go from not having any stars to having potentially three of them and three young guys that you're going to be able to control and watch for a very long time. I love his demeanor. When he was scoring goals towards the end of that pause and we did go in the locker room, you did talk to him. I love that confidence. I love that swagger that he had. You could tell that he was feeling himself. I'm a big fan of him. Of all the things that Paul Fenton got wrong, man, he had a grand flip and slam with getting Kevin Fiala here from Mikael Granlund. So
bring back Granlund. What are you talking about?
Yeah. Okay. But I think Fiala has every makings to be the superstar that we all want him to be. This kid is legit. He shoots the puck. He has the confidence and swagger that I love. This franchise has been starved for someone like this. Yes, I think he's a superstar.
Okay. So He got traded in the midst of the 2018-19 campaign from the Preds to the Wild. In that season, he had 13 goals, 26 assists, 83 games, and a minus 23. Last year with the Wild, he got incredibly hot late, and in 64 games, finished with a career high tying 23 goals, 31 assists, which was easily a career high, and was a minus one. I think he is on the precipice of being a star. Here's what I need to see. An entire season where he'll have a slump or two. So like he's not going to completely crush for an entire year, but 56 games where he's engaged and playing like he showed he has the ability to play, because he showed it for 56 games. That's my next step. And if he does that, I'm going with star, because I think his skills are outstanding. Now, again, we got to default back to the one talking point: who's a center? Because that's going to impact him. There's no question. But Fiala showed us in the stretch that I believe began in February of 2020 that he has the attributes and the skills to be a star. But he has never put it together for enough of a season to say that's definitely him. So if we see it for 56 games, if we see him apply himself and play at the level that he basically did for what, the last, Dex, was it about 15 to 20 games of last year?
I think it was more like 20 to 25 games, I feel like.
Okay. But anyway. If we see that for 56 games, there is no reason why Fiala and Kaprizov can't be one of the top tandems at wing in this league.
That's why I am curious, Judd. That's why I asked you, do you think they stand the same line? Because I mean, look at a team like Colorado, right? They are top heavy. They're a one line team, essentially, right? They have insane firepower on top. If things aren't going well offensively, I think you have to see a situation where you put them on the same line. I know the guy in the middle is the biggest external factor in answering that question, but I wouldn't be shocked at all. And how much fun would it be to see Colorado's top line, Minnesota's top line, no defense, baby, all offense going up and down the ice, hot hockey.
Who else is playing after that?
Yeah.
Do you not care?
I don't care.
Yeah, second line, whatever.
Yeah, doesn't matter.
Whatever. Benito's fine. I could see it. I'm just saying, I think to start off with, I probably don't have them on the same line. But look, power play and stuff, for sure, for sure. Fiala, the most important thing to me is to see him, and I guess I'm jaded too, because how many players on this team have we seen, and I'm not trying to imply that there have been a lot of top-line stars, because there have not been, but how many top players have we seen in the franchise, right, who like take weeks off, and we're like, what happened to you? And then they come back, and they're, you know, again, let's hit the stretch run, go. So if Fiala can put together 56 just solid, damn, I care for 56 games, and it's the perfect year, right? It's 56 games. It's not 82. It's the perfect year for a guy like him to basically come out and declare, I am an NHL all-star. I can score. Kaprizov is good too, but I am the best scorer on this team.
I love it.
All right. Final thoughts? Are you... Man, we've been going a while here.
We have. We haven't had much to talk about in the last 6 weeks.
This is great. This is great.
Well.
Absolutely fantastic. And I know that you will be staying up late throughout the course of the next few months. You don't even care.
I love West Coast hockey. I'm a night owl in general. Okay. Like even if it's a work night, I am not in bed till probably midnight. It's how I operate. Sure. So I am for the West Coast times. And to be honest, I wouldn't be shocked at all if, and I know Garen was kind of hinting at this in his Zoom press conference too, that there might be some times even on the West Coast, they might bump it down a little bit to get everyone on the right page there.
Oh, like a 6 o'clock start.
It would be an early, you know, it might even be 8 our time and 6 their time. Yeah. Wouldn't be shocked at all.
All right, Judd's Hockey Show. I believe we will be back next week because there's finally hockey to talk about.
Yeah.
He's Declan. I'm Judd. Dex.
Pass, shoot, score.